I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hi guys, and welcome to Adulting. This is the podcast where we try to figure out what it means to be a grown-up. And today I'm joined by one half of Millennial Love, Olivia Petter.
Hello.
And Livy also happens to be one of my best friends of like over 10 years.
Is it over 10 years?
Yeah, I think so, because we're 24. How old were we went to prep school?
13.
Weren't we 11?
No, we were 11.
Yeah, I think so.
That's more than 10 years.
Yeah.
Long time. I know. It's a long time.
So we thought we'd talk about today, like dating, relationships and love, because everyone's always asking about this. Obviously, Livy's podcast is about dating. And Livy and I have had the most disparate loving adventures over our lives.
Loving adventures. Yeah, we've had very different experiences with dating.
So like, I think I've had like, maybe like three big relationships starting, like my first proper relationship was from the age of 14. Mm. And it was like really serious, like I thought I was going to get married.
Oh my God, yeah, it was really intense, wasn't it? Sorry, my brain is a bit slow today.
We're both slightly hungover.
Yeah, no, it was really intense, wasn't it? How long were you together?
I always thought it was like 3 years, but I'm sure it can't have been that long.
God, that is long when you're that age though, when you're 14, 15, 16, 17. Those are really like transformative years to be in a relationship with someone.
What's your dating history?
My dating history is basically I have been single for my entire life. I only really started dating properly in the last year, I think. I kind of, there was a guy at school that kind of screwed me around for ages. And that I think really messes you up when you're that age, because when you're 15, 16, 17, 18, the people that you like then, I think you like a lot more intensely than you would as an adult, because hormones and, you know, you're a bit more of a fantasist about it. It's the first person you get feelings for. It seems so much more romantic in your head than it actually is, and you just project all these feelings onto that person that aren't necessarily real.
Yeah, I think it's also because it's like your first experience of like having a, like, do you remember having a crush at school?
Oh my God.
And it was like painful.
Yeah, it's all consuming. And there's something quite like sadistic about being in that like longing state. And you're like, oh, but it's something really like artistic about this.
Oh my God, I was literally thinking this when I was watching a film with our other friend Bethany the other day. And there was a bit where there was like heartbreak. And I actually, for a split second, was like, I actually think I like being heartbroken, because there's something really romantic about that, like despair. And like, I basically thought to myself, I was like, that's when you feel alive. And I was like, what is wrong with me?
I know,
like,
what you
when
mean.
You're really sad and like really upset, that's when you feel like life is so like real.
Yeah, because you're like, God, I'm so tortured.
But we're really similar in this way, because we're both like massive romantics.
Oh my
stuff.
God, yeah. But I think it's actually really
damaging.
It's quite damaging for me. And it's I mean, that's why like I never really dated anyone until, like, you know, even through university, which is when most people start dating properly. I had like a few weird flings with people, but, you know, like two or three dates, and that was it. Nothing ever happened.
I think our friendship group is actually really evenly split between people like me who start having boyfriends quite early, and then people who just never really started dating until like now in the past few years.
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah, I think most people in our friendship group, they have had relationships.
Yeah.
I don't think there's actually that many people. Aside from, I mean, that's why Rachel and I do the podcast. Like, we're, you know, she's 1 year older than I am. Also never been in a relationship.
When we were growing up and when you didn't have a boyfriend, did it make you feel a kind of way? Like, were you like, did you want one? Or were you just like, this isn't for me? Or
no, I mean, the boys that I liked never really seemed to like me back, to be completely honest with you. I think if had they liked me back, I probably would have wanted a relationship. I mean, I screwed my one chance at relationship up with this guy that then screwed me over for 4 years.
Fine, yeah.
Like, that was my one shot, and I screwed it up by getting with his best friend.
Oh, yeah.
At a party. And then when I realised, can I swear?
Yeah.
Okay. Oh, shit. I really like him. And then I remember coming back to school and being like, okay, yeah, I'm actually ready to give this a go. And, he really liked me before for, 6 months or something. And I was kind of like, oh, no, I'm just going to flirt with you and enjoy the attention. And then I got back to school, I think for sick form, and I was like, yeah, really like this guy. And he started dating someone else.
Yeah, that I do remember so vividly.
And it crushed me because, crushed me more than it should have done. And it really, really threw me. And then he continued to mess me around for the duration of his 4-year relationship.
But I think, do you know what else with you? I think it's so, what's the word? It's because of your personality. Livy does things so well. I don't know anyone that works really hard. She's really good. You're really good at doing things well. So I think when you want something, because it didn't work, that killed you. Whereas I'm quite good at being oh, well.
Yeah, no, I'm terrible.
Whereas you work really hard and you achieve things and you're really she's really successful and she does things very well. So I think that translates into a relationship. So when that didn't work out with him, you were just what the fuck?
Yeah. I failed.
Yeah,
I'm
that's it.
Failure.
I think that's what it is. You have really high achiever.
Yeah, but it's affected me even in relationships now. So when I started dating someone in October last year, only for 3 months, and then when that ended, that was him ending it with me, I was completely devastated, because even though I knew the whole time, this isn't really, he's not a great guy, he's not really treating me very well, you were always telling me he's so awful, and all my friends, when it ended, they were like, well, thank God it's ended, because had we met him, we all would have hated him.
I know.
Because he treated you like shit. But when that ended, I was like, oh my God, what is wrong with me? And I feel like it's such a personal attack, and it makes me think, what am I lacking? What's not good enough about me? And it's awful, because no one should ever be made to feel like that. But it's just your natural reaction when someone says, I don't want to see you anymore. But you're like, what have I done?
Rejection's awful. But also, I think what it was, we started doing that way younger. So I started going through rejections or getting difficult times, or people didn't, from 14. But you're doing it now. So I actually think it's almost harder. And also when you're little, I think you're a bit more resilient. Because you've only just started doing the dating thing, you've got a whole... This is when Livy wants to do something and I want to be no, you shouldn't do this. I'm I can't say that because I was the most wild child. So I have to hold back and be no, you just have to do it. But it's what did it... When we were in relationships, did it make you feel like you were left out?
Not really, no. And because I never wanted a boyfriend just for the sake of having a boyfriend. I only ever pined for specific people. Which makes me sound like a sad little loser.
No, that's good. You're not meant to just go out with anyone.
No, because I don't know. I didn't really feel left out. And to be honest, I don't really think I was ready.
Yeah.
I don't think I was emotionally mature enough. I still don't know if I'm emotionally mature enough, to be honest. I'm seeing a guy now who is a bit more into things than I might be, and I'm not sure how I feel about it. It's freaking me out.
I don't think it's that you're not emotionally mature enough. I think it's that you are mature. When I was this and I got into that relationship, I literally used to come and think of topics that we could speak about, because we just weren't in any way, shape or form really that compatible. Think about him now. But I was so little. I was like, oh, this is my boyfriend now, great. And then we just literally stayed together. I loved his mum as well so much, that's why I stayed with him. Do you remember I was obsessed with his mum? She was such a babe. So I never really broke up with him. That wasn't emotional maturity. That was immaturity, not realising that I was just with a person, like you said in your episode the other day, for the sake of having a relationship.
Yeah.
Obviously, I wouldn't do that now. But I think actually what it is now is you're almost so hyper-aware of things. And because you haven't had a relationship yet, you're being really cautious about it.
Yeah, I am cautious. But equally, I hate it when people tell me, oh, you've never had a relationship. Is it because you're too picky?
Yeah.
Because that's a really negative comment, and it shouldn't be a negative thing. To be picky,
you should be picky.
Well, exactly, you should be picky, but it implies that you're being picky on a superficial level. When you say picky, it sort of implies that, okay, I have a checklist. They need to be tall, they need to have dark hair, they need to be funny, they need to do this for a living, they need to do this.
No,
and
but
really,
I think...
I'm picky about the relationship with the person.
Yeah, but I think that could be picky, because I think that's you inferring that. Because obviously you're if you ask someone what their type is, I remember asking Matt what his type was and waiting for him to say what they look like, and he was loud, opinionated. Do you know what I mean? It's not a type isn't necessarily
true.
It's what you think. But I don't think pickiness is a bad thing. But also maybe it's a people might be saying that as a deflection of themselves. You might make other people feel the other way around, like, shit, am I just settling, you know?
Yeah, I know what you mean. But I don't know, I guess I've never really felt peer pressure to do anything.
Yeah.
To be honest with you. And that's,
no, you haven't. Even no. when we used to, like, run off and smoke at school.
No,
we would get really annoyed at Livvy because she wouldn't come. We'd be like, Livvy, we'd all be, like, getting drunk in the Indian and, like, smoking behind bike sheds. And all of our group would go, and Livvy just be like, I'm not going to come.
No, I kind of just do what I want to do, which is good and
it's
bad.
It's really good.
Yeah, but it's good and bad because then if someone tries to make me do something I don't want to do, I'm like, no.
I'm such a walkover. I literally, I'm like, okay, yes, I'll come.
Whereas I'm like, no, I'm not drinking tonight. Like, for example, alcohol.
Yeah,
it's really,
you're very
it's
good.
Really true with alcohol. So I will often go out and maybe not drink. And, you know, my friends will be like, why aren't you drinking? That's so weird. And it brings out an insecurity in them.
Yeah.
Which I just think is so bizarre.
But this is what I used to do. We talked about this, like, not that long ago, but years ago, I'd always do this. I'd try and, like, force Livvy to drink with me because I'd be so pissed off that she didn't, like, why do you not want to drink with me? And then I realise now that I'm older, because sometimes I now actually have grown up out of drinking. Don't want to do it. I'm like, I'm so sorry. I understand now.
But what my point is that it's similar to the boyfriend thing.
Yeah.
Like, you know, yeah, all my friends have had boyfriends. I've never felt that I'm necessarily left out or in any way. I just, and you know, I like talking about dating. Obviously, yeah. I have the podcast. I love listening to people and absorbing their, you know, concerns and trying to give them advice because I feel like I know my friends very well and
yeah.
I can give them advice based on, you know, what I think is best for them.
It wasn't a loaded question. It's more because I feel like I get people messaging me quite a lot being like, I've never been in a relationship. Mm. What's wrong with me? Or like, people can feel like if you're one in a group of people that are doing something, maybe that doesn't apply to you because as you say, you're quite headstrong and you do what you want to do. But I know that a lot of insecurities that I get from girls and women that listen is that like, when is there going to be a right time? Why haven't I been the one? And I was just interested to see whether or not you felt like...
No, I have definitely had those feelings. I've had those feelings of that's not necessarily about other people, though. That's more about me
yeah.
feeling unwanted.
Yeah.
And feeling like I've always liked these guys that aren't interested in me. What am I doing wrong? And I don't want to lower my standards. And I don't want to, you know, necessarily go for the guys that maybe like me but I'm not attracted to.
Yeah.
I don't want to settle for less just for the sake of it. But I think, you know, for people who are listening that are like, oh God, I've never had a boyfriend, what's wrong with me? It feeds into the general stigma of being single that we spoke about on the podcast
yeah.
the other day. It's like we are conditioned to think that being single is a problem that needs solving.
If you're a woman. Yeah, not if you're
Whereas
a man.
Whereas if you're a man, you're a bachelor and you know, go and sleep with whoever you want and
yeah.
it's fine. Whereas if you're a woman, it's like, no, you must find someone and have babies with them.
Yeah.
And it's just ridiculous. But I do think that's fading. And I think if you're single and you're happy being single, make the most of the spare time that you've got to just indulge yourself in the hobbies that you like and
yeah.
you know, training, going to the gym, like seeing your friends. Because frankly, if you're in a relationship, even if you're just dating someone, it takes up so much of your time.
And the other thing is, I have to say, like, it does make me feel like it's like having a pet or a child that you can't just want. What if I just wanted to go? Not that I would do this, but I was thinking, like, if I wasn't going out on the mat, I would have probably gone traveling this year.
Yeah, no, you do. You lose a sliver of your autonomy.
Yeah,
you do when you're in a relationship. And I think that, you know, it's important just to prioritize yourself because, you know, the truth is you're not going to get yourself into a relationship if you're not feeling confident.
Yeah. And I think the other thing with relationships and like meeting people I think sometimes what happens, I feel like maybe sometimes with you is that you're like so ready to kind of like, sometimes I think you just have to experience, I know you've had bad dates and stuff, so maybe not necessarily you, but people feel like they'll know when you know. But actually, I think you just have to kiss lots of different people, date lots of different people.
I agree.
Because sometimes there was a guy that I dated at uni once, but it turned out he was a Jehovah's Witness, so it didn't work out.
I remember that story.
And I really liked him, and he was so not anything about my type, but I just really fancied him.
Really?
And he used to like smoke loads of weed, and like, it was so random, like, it so wasn't my type. But yeah, it had to end, because I went round to his house and I was like, why don't you have a Christmas tree? And it was like, really, no Christmas. Not that you would have a Christmas tree either. But he was like, it's because of my religion. I was like, oh, you're Jewish. He was like, no, I'm a Jehovah's Witness. And I started laughing. And I was like, what's your parents like? Go and knock on people's doors. Sorry if anyone's Jehovah's Witness listening. It's just, I'm quite atheist. So it just didn't match up. And then we started talking about like blood transfusions. And I was like, would you take one? And he said, no. And I was just like, I don't think I can do this. And then I left.
That's so
yeah,
funny.
And we talked about evolution. He was like, I don't believe in evolution. Really? Yeah, he was like, that wow. didn't happen. Yeah.
But an enriching experience.
Really interesting. But the point was that, like, I would never have fancied him. He just happened to live with one of my girlfriends from uni. And then I used to go around and I'd, like, speak to him loads. And after a while, I really fancied him. But if you'd put him on a dating app or if you'd put him in a bar, I would never, ever have either swiped right or, like, gone up to speak to him. So it's really interesting how much we presume we know about what we want.
Yeah, well, that's why dating apps are so problematic, because so dating apps are obviously a purely aesthetic platform. Even if you're, you know, even if you read the bio and you look at the height and all that shit, it's still aesthetic because it is a curated profile. It's false. It's completely artificial. That is a person on a screen. That is not a real person standing in front of you, whose expressions you can interpret, whose voice you can hear, whose mannerisms you can observe. Yeah. Like, those are the things that attract you to someone.
Definitely.
So it's so difficult. Like, there are so many people, I'm sure I've swiped left on dating apps too, who, if I met in real life, I'd find, like, really charming and attractive. It's really difficult. And I've been on dating app dates, quite a few of them, that have been complete disasters.
Yeah.
But it's weird because you get on with them so well when you're chatting. Because obviously, when you're chatting just on a phone, texting someone, that person has the time to consider your message and craft a very witty, clever response.
This is what's so funny. So I've actually never really used dating apps. There's only, like, a tiny bit of uni. And I remember speaking to the guy that I ended up going out with on... Oh, no, it wasn't even on a dating, but it was on Facebook. And I remember I used to write, I've made myself so funny. I wrote the funniest shit I've ever written in my life. I even used to read them back and be like, God, I'm hilarious. And then I was like, I remember then when we went to go on the date, I was like, fuck, I'm going to have to, like, practice things I'm going to say because I've made it so funny. Like, you couldn't talk like that out loud.
Yeah.
You wouldn't be just that funny. I don't think I've ever been that funny since, to be honest. But I'd really think about it. It was quite manipulative because I really understood his sense of humour and I really, like, changed my language and the way that I spoke to be like that.
It is, though. It is manipulative because I think subconsciously you're always trying, with dating apps, you're always trying to craft the best version of yourself in order to attract that other person. And you really have the power to do that on a dating app. Like you said, you can spend ages, you know, dissecting every message and thinking, okay, I think he'll find this funny. You can't do that in real life.
No, not at all.
And it's a totally different way of interacting with someone. Like, it's not natural. Even the idea of meeting someone off a dating app, it's forced from the beginning.
Yeah.
And I've had it before. I've had maybe one good dating app story, but it ended badly because he ended up just treating me like crap.
Yeah.
Because he felt validated to do that because we had no ties to one another. And I think because of the way that we met, he always viewed me as disposable. Like, when you meet someone on a dating app, you can sleep together, you can go on dates, whatever. Ultimately, at the end of the day, you met this person in an artificial way. It's not going to be the same as if they were a mutual friend.
Yeah, I literally have a guy friend who would go on dates just because he wanted to eat in different restaurants. So he'd, like, literally take a girl on a Bumble date just because he'd, like, want someone to go to, like,
really?
He was, like, basically doing it as, like, a social experiment.
Right.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Which is really funny. But I think the other problem is with dating and stuff is we think, like, we're so busy to create this person we think everyone's going to fancy. And, like, that was always my thing, like, I'd want them to fancy me. The guy I'm going out with now, who's also, like, one of Livy's, like, best friends, has known me this almost same amount of time as Livy. And I was such a shit at school. Like, he knows everything that I've ever done in my whole entire life, like, all the bad things about me. And he still quite likes me. So we're fine. But that really shocks me because I remember I'd meet people and I'd try and think about all the things that they probably wouldn't like about me if they found out or, you know. And actually, people aren't that black and white and it's not that simple. And the problem with dating apps and stuff is you present this version of yourself that isn't you at all. So even if they fancy you from that, that's not even who you are.
Yeah.
So it's, like, really hard to make it work.
And you're never going to feel comfortable around that person because you met them in this weird way when you were behaving not yourself. Like, it's not the good basis for any relationship. But saying that, some of our good friends are in very good relationships from meeting on dating apps. So there are anomalies to it. It's just...
I think it's more and more common now, but I think it also really depends how you're coming at it. It's the same with anything in a relationship, though. It's like what point in your life you're in. Because the other thing is, like, you could meet the most perfect person, but if you're not in the right place, it just won't work. I've had relationships work where I thought they were dicks, but actually they were probably dicks and I wasn't ready to be the right kind of person either. So, like, it's really, I think you have to be really fierce. Like, I think you have to be really fiercely independent, have your whole, like, your personality and yourself ready to have someone add to your life.
Yeah, you do, but it's hard to you know, I like you said, I'm a pretty headstrong person.
Yeah.
The guys I've seen in the past and the guys I've dated have made me feel so small and so bad about myself and feel like you know, I've been made to feel like I'm chasing after them the entire time, and that I will change my personality to fit into their mold of the kind of girl that they're looking
for.
Yeah,
well, I think the other issue is that we're in society, like, the kind of men we are normally told to find attractive from films and books and stuff are the bad guys, the sexy guys, the ones with a bit of edge, the ones who... So we then tend to go for them and then want to change them. I will tell you this for a fact, you can't change anyone. Even if they're, like, 18 to 27, you just can't change someone. Once someone's aware, and they can change themselves if they want to, but there's no... people are just how they are. So there's no point getting with someone and being like, I'm going to make them change. Like, you just have to... you have to find the right kind of person for the right reasons. And I think sometimes we date people because they're a projected image of what society has told us is the right person. And you almost know they're going to hurt you because that is exactly what that... kind of person is.
Yeah, but that's what you've been conditioned to find attractive.
Exactly.
Because you're like, I need, you know, it's masochistic. You chase after someone that makes you feel like they need to be chased, and because also, you're like, it's going to be so much more gratifying when I get them.
Yeah, and also as women, we're conditioned to think that, like, we can't be too vocal because it'll be bossy, or we can't be too opinionated because they'll get scared off. So I think other things you'll find is that women will, like, mute down their personality to not offend or to make sure that this guy doesn't run off. When actually, if you're going to start dating someone, you should be like, look, this is how I feel about X, Y, Z. Mm. I want this, this, this. Because otherwise, you set a precedent and you could be hiding in this, like, fake personality for like a year, and then suddenly you're like, oh my god, I hate it when you do this, I hate it, and you'll have just done yourself a disservice.
Yeah.
And men, I think there was, what was that I was listening to, maybe it was on the Receipts podcast, but they're saying how, like, this guy was on there and they were like, people want opinionated women. I don't know why we're taught that women are supposed to be like the fairer sex. It's such an old trope. Mm. And like
that women are supposed to be docile. Yeah. I know, but it's so true. Like, I think I told you this story when I was dating the guy who I met on Bumble, and we were on a date and he was talking about his ex-girlfriend. And he was quite rude about her. And he was like, oh, yeah, you know what? She was just a really angry person.
Oh, my God, yeah.
And I remember in my head, my reaction was like, okay, don't be angry, Libby. Don't ever be angry. Like, how awful so is that? Bad. But that was the first thing I thought of. I was like, I took that as, like, an instruction.
Yeah.
When actually, first of all, he should not have been speaking badly about his ex-girlfriend in front of a girl who he's on, like, what, a third date with? That's a really bad sign, I think.
For
sure. If someone speaks badly about exes. Like, you know, obviously we've all got bad experiences, but it's your own business at that point, you know? And, like, don't start slagging off someone.
And also, if she's angry, maybe he was making her angry.
Well, exactly, exactly. Now I'm like, what the hell were you doing to make her angry? I see why she was angry. Yeah. You're an arsehole.
Yeah, he is an arsehole. But this happened to me. I remember I had an awful ex in my, like, first year of uni, and he told me, always went on about he had a psycho ex-girlfriend. It turned out he was literally, like, the most awful person you've ever met. And I was like, oh, he's the psycho. But yeah. I felt so sorry for this girl, because in my head, I'd imagine he told me these stories. And then it just turned out, and I've had another friend who had a boyfriend a bit like that, and he always went on about the psycho ex-girlfriend, and at the end we were like, he's the psycho. But when people are like that, they project it, and it's normally when someone's very narcissistic and, like, really can't see how toxic their behaviour is, and they perceive other people's reactions to them as, like, their faults, but they don't realise it's a reaction to their actions.
Yeah, and how would you know that? Because you're just taking what he says at face value. But the psycho ex-girlfriend thing really bothers me, because I think that's such, like, a sexist trope,
isn't it? Oh, it's so bad. No man's ever called a psycho.
No, never.
Ever. It's really, it's massive. Have you seen that thing? It's so bad. I remember laughing at it, like, 3 years ago when I wasn't very woke. It's like the hot crazy scale. And it's like, the hotter they get, the crazier they get. And then it's like a box. So it's like, and it's a guy on a whiteboard. And he's like, so between, like, a 7 and an 8, they're, like, super hot, but they have to be below the line. I can't remember. And then it gets, like, really high in the corner. He's like, and at the top we have unicorns. They don't exist. This video still goes on Facebook all the time. And it was a joke, but it's like, men would literally post this. That's ridiculous. But it's even like, people don't expect, everyone's obsessed with, like, Amal Clooney because she's beautiful and a lawyer. They're like, I can't believe that she's beautiful and likes fashion and she's a lawyer.
Meanwhile, like, every single man in the world, you would never question
their looks.
Yeah, whereas it's like, oh my god, a successful woman who's also, like, conventionally beautiful.
Yeah.
Wow.
I remember even at school, our teacher, one of our head of years once, I got caught smoking, I think. And he was like, why would you do this? You're so pretty. And I was like,
really?
What has this got to do with anything? Yeah.
Why would you do this? You're so pretty.
He was like, you're a really beautiful girl. And, like, you've got so much, like, be like, you're doing really well in school. Like, you're
that's
a singer.
That's part of him, like, congratulating you almost.
Yeah, but he should have been like, you're a singer, like, don't smoke, not like, you're really beautiful, as if that was my only worth that I had at school. I was like in sixth form, I was like 16, 17.
God,
I had two teachers at school telling me that I was pretty when I was in a detention as, like, a reason as to why I shouldn't misbehave.
It's like it's some sort of currency.
Yeah, exactly, like it was a currency. Exactly that, like, girls are pretty and boys are smart.
Yeah.
Which was really bad.
It's horrific, isn't it?
I think now we notice it, but it was massive when we were little.
Yeah, well, we do notice it, but I think it's actually still, it still goes on for a lot of people our age. Just, yeah. It doesn't get, people are just, you know, it's so entrenched, it's so ingrained, you just accept it.
Because I think I used to see stuff as compliments as well, and now I find it insulting. You said this before, though. Do you remember when What's-His-Face said to you, you're really hot?
And funny.
And you're really funny. Oh, and Libby was absolutely fuming. She rung me and she was like, he said I was hot and funny.
Okay,
I'm
no,
so
let me
annoyed.
Let me explain. So this was the guy that I was seeing for 3 months who dumped me. And this was in like January. And when he was dumping me, he was like, so yeah, I just don't think we really have anything in common. But you're really hot and really funny. And that was like his sort of way of, you know, being like,
yeah,
trying to, you know, alleviate the...
Like, you
know,
I don't want you, but you've got this.
Yeah, I don't want you, but by the way, like, well done, you're hot and funny. And to me, all I heard from that was, you're not intelligent, you're not interesting, you're not, you know, you're not interested in the same things as I am. You're inferior to me.
Yeah.
You're these things, which are very vapid, superficial qualities.
Funny's good.
Yeah, funny's okay, but like, you know, I don't want to be. I am so much more, like, I feel so much more validated if someone tells me, I think you're so intelligent.
Yeah, same.
Or if someone says, that article you wrote was so insightful.
Yeah.
Or, you know, just that kind of stuff, I appreciate so much more than if someone says, oh, you're really hot.
Yeah.
You've really fun. Like, I don't give a shit. Like,
maybe you've got hot
shit.
Privilege, though, because you are really fucking hot.
So maybe you're like, I know.
Hot privilege.
That's quite funny. I do not have hot privilege, but I just think this guy was just an arsehole.
Yeah, no, he was an arsehole.
And was trying to make me feel better about the situation. And it annoyed me that he felt that that would make me feel better about it, because that's almost also an insult.
But on the flip side, another thing I was going to say was, we were also talking about how guy was like really complimentary towards you. And you were like, oh my God, I can't believe he said this. And I was like, Livy, men, like, you should, if you're dating someone, they should make you feel like you're the best person they've ever seen. You should wake up in the morning with like morning breath and look like a mole rat, and they should be like, oh my God, like a freshly baked loaf of bread.
Yeah, so I didn't, people would always say that to me. You would always say that to me, like, that's just not ever going to happen. Like, boys are so mean to me. Boys will never say that to me. Like, I need to, you know, if I wake up in bed with a guy, I'm going to run to the loo and put makeup on before they wake up, because they're going to think I look like crap. But recently, I have been seeing a guy who is very, very complimentary, and I can't really take it. I'm not used to it. I don't know what to do. It's quite stressful.
Yeah.
And he's like, you're so cringe and so awkward, and stop being so embarrassed. But I just can't take
it. But that's so bad, because I think we're conditioned, like, to think that they're just going to treat us badly. Or, like, for instance, when I was in that, like, quite emotionally abusive relationship, he would kind of make me feel like shit, so that the only validation that really mattered was his.
Mm.
Because it didn't matter what anyone else said, because he was so kind of rude to me all the time, or, like, telling me, like, maybe you should go to the gym, or you could look a bit better if you did this, or you should do this. Have you seen how fit this girl is? All the time. Jesus. She looks really good all the time. And then if he said once in a month, like, you look pretty, that would literally, I'd be like, because he was so mean to me. And it didn't matter if my friends were like, you look amazing, or anything else.
Yeah.
But that's, I think we're kind of taught to believe that that validation is like
something you need to fight for.
Yeah. Or like, it's, and that they mean so much. Whereas if you're quite confident in yourself and you feel happy, like, they should make you feel even better. It shouldn't, it should never be like a tug of war, and it should also never feel like you don't feel good enough. If you're in the presence of someone and they make you feel uncomfortable in your skin, that is a space that you just shouldn't be in.
Absolutely. And Rachel always says this to me. She's like, you need to be with someone who makes you feel like a priority, not an option.
Yes.
I have always felt like an option.
Yeah.
Always. With every single guy I've dated, it has been a case of, oh, I'm kind of busy this week, I could squeeze you in here.
Yeah.
Or like, can you just come to mine? Or like, can you just come to the pub near my house?
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Like, never really going above and beyond to make any effort for me.
Yeah.
And, you know, I don't realise that that's a problem, because I'm just like, well, this is just how it is. Like,
we did this before. I remember once we went for a walk and I got really annoyed about something he said. And you, honestly, for the life of you, were like, I don't understand why you're so pissed off at it. I can't really remember what it was. And I was just like, because they should never make you feel like you're like pandering to them, or that like you have to change your ways about. But on the flip side of that, it's a hard thing to do, but it's kind of what I was saying before, is you do have to be quite like we're going to do this, or you can come to me, or just as opinionated and as strong as they are, because then they're like, oh, okay. But yeah. if you're like, oh my God, it's fine, and then you keep doing that, then after like 4 weeks, and you're going, obviously they're going to expect you to always do what they ask you to do. So it is quite hard, especially in those early stages, especially as a woman, because you feel like you want to impress them, you want them to think you're the cool girl who's really chilled and like, oh my God, yeah, let's do whatever, I don't mind.
Mm.
I'll drink beer. Actually, I like beer now though.
Do you?
Yeah.
That's such a random segue. I just feel like I'm really nervous about being sassy with boys, even though I'm sassy with everyone else.
You're so sassy. I'll be like, do you want to come to me? And she's like, no, it's too far.
Yeah, literally. I'll be like, there's a party in Clapham. I live in North London. I'll be like, nah.
Can't go, sorry.
No, but if it was a guy I was dating, yeah. I'd be like, yeah, they'd be there in a second.
Good, I'm glad you're saying this out loud.
Yeah, no, I think I have to because yeah. like, I'm sure so many other women yeah. do this. It's awful though. You need to be aware of yourself doing it and catch yourself doing it, yes. and be like, this isn't okay. Like, this isn't me. This isn't me being true to who I am. I don't want a guy to think that I'm just gonna, you know, drop everything to do what he wants. That's not the kind of relationship I would want anyway.
And do you know what it is you're being true to though? It's society's ideal woman, which is servile and maternal, and kind of like, there's always that idea that we're gonna look after you and we'll come to you, and you poor thing, you must have had such a hard day's work. And like, I even do it with Matt sometimes, like I'll be like, oh my God, your day must, I'll cook for you. And I'm like, wait a minute, I'm going to work. But like, that's just, you know, I think yeah. something inside us is very like nurturing and caregiving, much more to men than we are with our friends.
Yeah, I know what you mean, actually.
I am like that with my friends as well, though, but I'm just really quite smothering.
I am too, but like, there was a situation with a guy recently, and he, I was dating him, and he got quite upset about something, and we were standing outside, and in a group, big group of people, and I could see that he was a bit upset. I just grabbed his hand and just held his hand. I just felt like really like, I feel like really yeah. bad for you, but I need to
do something.
Yeah, but we're like surrounded by a group of people, so I can't really do anything. I'm just gonna hold your hand.
That's so sweet.
Yeah, I'm really sweet.
But yeah, I think it's interesting because everyone's at such different stages. Like, there are, I do you know what I still can't get over is people that start dating when they're 14 and then stay together till they're 28.
Do people do that though?
Yeah, but they do. And I think if I hadn't had more wits about me, I literally could have actually stayed with that guy that I was with, like, just out of pure ease.
Mm.
And then once you've been in it for like 6 years, must be very hard to turn your back.
Yeah, but I think that's quite bleak in a way.
Because, oh, for sure.
Yeah, because what if you get to a point where you feel too comfortable, you don't fancy them anymore, but you're too comfortable to leave that situation.
I think it's very scary to leave.
Yeah, I'm sure it is. If you've been with them since you're 14, it's all you know.
Yeah.
Especially if you live with them, you know, you share a mortgage or whatever. Like, there's all these complicated grown-up things.
There's a really interesting thing that Jess Oley said on one of my podcasts recently, and she was like, I'm so different from the girl that I was 5 years ago. I don't even recognise her anymore, and that's okay. And I think that's so true. I'm not the same person that I was when I was 18 at all. And I think sometimes we think that, you know, why aren't we in relationships and why aren't we doing that? We're growing. There's so much personal growth that happens. Even in the past year, I think I've grown up so much. I can even look back at things I said 6 months ago and I'm like, I can't believe I said that. I think so much happens, especially in your early 20s, that if you aren't in a relationship and you feel like, why aren't I in one? You're probably just doing a hell of a lot of growing, which takes up so much time in of itself.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think I have grown up. I think I've only really started growing up in terms of relationships in the last year. Like, that really...
But that's what I mean. Everyone does it at different stages.
Yeah.
So I think I grew up, like, maturity-wise, like, now I'm starting to do a lot of growing in a different sense. Whereas maybe I did my relationship growing up younger. And everyone grows up, and some people are really good with money management. Some people get really good jobs from 21.
Mm.
Other people will have the most amazing relationship but won't be in their, like, stable career till they're 30. I think we all just either prioritise or we just naturally fall into a position where, like, your job is one of the coolest ones out of all our friends. She literally writes in The Independent, which is incredible. She's 24. It's sick. Like, I think that's amazing. So, like, all of us are doing... Whereas I've got another friend who's still doing a master's at uni, but she's, like, in a... You know? So I think we forget. It's very easy to focus on the things that we don't have and not really look at the bigger picture. Not that you think that, but I'm saying, like, as a general
rule. No, but I do. And the thing... That's why, like, dating has always been my biggest insecurity, because it's the one area of my life that I feel like I've never, ever had any success in.
Yeah.
Whatsoever. Like, obviously never having had a relationship. But, you know, that's society's definition of success.
Yeah.
Is having a relationship. But actually... I think now it's more about being comfortable in your own skin, and then you attract the right kinds of people.
You know that saying that's like, the first thought you have is the one that you're conditioned to have, and the second one you have is your opinion. When I imagine success, the immediate thing that pops up, it's really weird, it's literally like a house, a family, and like a Labrador. I don't even want a dog.
Really?
But like without meaning to, like if you say success, I imagine like a big car and a house. Then if I think about what success is, it would be like doing something that would be like fundamentally important to society, or like changing something positive, or doing something that, like something to do with a career that wasn't about money at all, but more about like a legacy, or do you know what I mean?
That's
what I think actually success is. But when I think of success, like just without meaning to think about it, like subconsciously, I imagine like a massive car, a massive house, and a dog.
God, mine's so different. I was like, okay, what's my subconscious first thought for success? And it's like a woman really successful on her own in a high flying job.
That's
no
so
family, no man. Nothing.
That's so interesting.
What does that say about me?
What's your second one? What do you actually think? What do you consciously want success to be?
Consciously, I don't know if it involves a family either.
Mine wasn't about family, mine was about career.
Yeah, I think mine would still be career, but maybe less about myself, maybe more like in a team doing something like of value.
Yeah, that's what I mean, something valuable. Like
for society.
Yeah, exactly.
Doing something that means, I don't know, something about to do with the environment or something to do
yeah,
with...
Yeah, that's what I think.
Maybe like, I mean, I love my job, but something maybe like investigative reporting and...
Yeah, that's cool.
Exposing, you know, people who are doing very, very bad things.
Yeah, I think mine would be something to do like feminism or like helping.
Mm.
But yeah, mine doesn't... My success isn't... Also, it's not money, which I think a lot of people fault back on success as money, but I don't know if that's because...
No,
we're from
well, obviously it's not money for me because I'm a journalist. If you want to make money, don't be a journalist, ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah, that is true. But then I don't know if also we're from a point of privilege where we probably never really truly wanted for anything.
True.
Compared to a lot of people.
No, that's very true. So that's very true. And journalism is a very privileged career.
Yeah, it's like the full, people in journalism.
Yeah, the people in journalism. I mean, it's written about all the time.
Yeah.
How journalism is like a whitewashed industry. It really is. And that's because in order to get jobs in journalism, you need to do unpaid work experience.
And people can't afford to do that.
People can't afford to do that. And people don't live in London.
Quickly, back to the women in a high-flying career thing question. Do you think that also, like, with dating, do you think that comes back to, like, family and stuff?
I think I have issues with family, to be completely honest with you, because of my family.
Because your parents split up when you were little.
My parents split up when I was little. My dad moved to the States, have quite a fractured relationship with him. Wouldn't say I have, like, daddy issues in the sense, which is also a term that I have a real problem with.
Yeah, that is awful.
Can't bear that.
So bad.
I think it's really sexist. But I would say that it has affected my perspective on relationships because it's just me and my mum and that's it. And
yeah.
And even that is fraught sometimes. So a lot of the time I feel like a single unit, in a sense. And that is something that actually gives me quite a lot of sadness quite a lot of the time. But, and it's bad because I think I sort of instinctively push people away that care about me sometimes.
We talk about this a lot because we're both really like... we just have very similar thoughts on like romanticizing and like just talking about family. We don't mind talking about things, but what's really interesting is Livy and I have had such a similar upbringing. Like, we literally went to the same school, we had the same friends, we did the same course at uni, and we have the most different because it's not opinions, it's like the way that we would deal in a situation is so different. And this is what people I think don't get, is like your friends around you could have the most exact upbringing and like you would get a text and read it in one way, and I would get it and read it, even just small things. And it's so interesting because we actually think the same things, but you don't realize how many environmental factors will affect everything that happens to you, whether that's your parents, whether it's something you saw at school, whether it's watching a friend's relationships, your siblings, the relationship with your mum, the relationship with your dad, like all of those things will affect how your friendships, relationships and everything else around you works.
God, yeah, I think particularly romantic relationships with your family, because the first romantic relationship you are exposed to is your parents' relationship.
Yeah.
And I think if from birth, pretty much as it was with me, that relationship is instantly not non-existent,
yeah,
of course that's going to affect you.
Yeah.
Like, of course it will. And then, you know, you see your parents sleeping around when you're a child. Like, it's not a normal environment to be in. And people really underestimate the impact of coming from a broken home.
Yeah.
It's really not talked about very much. And very few of our friends actually have divorced parents.
Yeah, that's true. My parents, they always argue when I'm younger. And even me and my sister had to say to my mum recently, like, me and my sisters used to fight, like, scream each other. My mum like, why did you do it? And we're like, we grew up watching you and dad argue.
Yeah.
So we just did that as well.
And thought it was normal.
And I've had to retrain myself to, like, realise that it's sometimes I'll react to something how my mum reacts, which isn't always like, my mum's the most amazing person ever, but she just has certain ways of reacting to things. And I've had to unlearn her behaviours that I'd picked up. And I think people don't realise that sometimes you think that's a really normal way to react to something, or you just, something pisses you off. But actually, it's just how you've conditioned to react by your parents' kind of years and years of whatever things they've been through, you know? And
yeah, of course it's going to impact you.
It's so interesting to think about it like that.
And you don't, unless you really actively think about it and you stop and take a step out and you're like, okay, well, why am I behaving like this towards this person in a relationship? And then you think, well, is it because of the way that my mum did this or the way that my dad did this? And often you can find links, like it's not that
but
hard.
But even thinking about like sex and stuff, because I had sex with my boyfriend when I was like 16, the first one. But that's quite young and I was quite happy to do it. But really? Whereas I think you didn't, maybe because of your like mum, you didn't.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, I was 18 when I lost my virginity, but I don't think I had sex again until I was 21.
Yeah.
After that. That's a long time.
Yeah.
Like, I might as well have just waited until I was 21.
But it's interesting because all of those things, I think people are like, oh my God, there's a set age to do it, or there's a reason. And there's no right or wrong reason to do something, but there will be a reason why you've decided not to do something. So don't do or not do it because you think it's right or wrong.
No, and also, God, if people call you frigid, tell them to fuck off.
Oh my God, at school, they'd be like, are you frigid?
I cannot bear that. And now I think no one would ever say that, because in the sort of post-Weinstein landscape where things are like, conversations around consent are so prominent, and thank God that they are, someone calling you frigid is just like sort of trying to elicit non-consensual sex out of you.
It's kind of violent.
Yeah, it is violent. It's also emotionally manipulative.
Yeah,
it's almost like gaslighting in a way, because it's making you doubt your own like, you know, sexuality. And you know, it's like, oh God, am I frigid? Yeah. Do I just not want to have sex? And it's also, like, no, of course you do, you just don't want to have sex with this person, and that's fine.
Oh my God, absolutely fine. And slut shaming at school was so,
it was so bad.
Even if you snog someone, I remember I'd have snog someone at a party and I'd be so scared. Then I wouldn't tell anyone, this is why I always get told, because I'd keep it a secret, and then it would come out like 3 weeks later, which make it so much worse, and they'd be like, oh, you snog it, whoever's 18.
It's awful, but it's still bad. Like in Love Island, when Megan said that she'd had sex with, what, 55 people or something?
Was it 55?
And she was all over the tabloids for it. And it's just like, oh my God, sod off. Like, this is what I thought, she was great. This is a woman embracing her sexuality, does not give a shit. Yeah. Like, we never see this on screen.
No, she was amazing. So there was such a good article that she actually shared, that someone wrote about her, about why she was like the perfect villain. Not actually villain,
on
but
Vice.
Just, yeah, did you read it? Yeah. It was so good.
It's really good.
I actually listened to a really good episode of Ways to Change the World. You know the Channel 4 podcast?
No.
And there's I can't remember her name. She's an 89-year-old. What's a dissident? Because they kept saying it. And I just
the dissident.
She's a dissident.
A dissident.
Yeah, it sounded like it just meant that she was like a rebel. Let me find what her name was. I'm not going to be able to, I'm going to butcher this because...
Okay, I want to know.
Nawal El Sardawi.
Uh-huh.
She's a revolutionary Egyptian feminist.
Feminist.
And she talks about the injustice of the patriarchy and what inspires her to write and why she thinks democracy doesn't exist. She's like 89. She's on this podcast. And he was like, why do you think that female genital mutilation is a thing? And she was genitally mutilated. And she writes about it a lot and campaigns against it. And she was like, the reason is because women and men are designed to be polygamous. To give women female genital mutilation is to make sure that the woman is monogamous and the man can be polygamous. That is the whole point of it. And that is how society has worked forever, because we live in a patriarchy. Women aren't supposed to be... Women have as much sexual desire as men. But years ago, in countries where they still do female genital mutilation, that is so that you don't get those sexual desires, or they hope. You obviously still get them. It's just not... You don't get the feeling, oh, it's painful.
God.
Yeah. And it happens all the time in lots of Middle Eastern countries and stuff. And they still do it to young girls, like, from when they're, like, 5. Awful. So they literally, like, cut the top of your clit off. And that is so... Because they're so scared of female sexuality. But women and men... Women have just as much sexual pleasure as men. And that's a real massive, weird issue that we, like, shame female sexuality. As if it's, like, why would you be... At school, we'd never talk about, like, sex in terms of our sexuality.
Never. And a lot of women, I think, are repulsed by their own sexuality.
Yeah.
And that's why a lot of women actually can't orgasm from sex.
Yeah. Well, they just don't know how their body... Do you know, even when I was talking to Anita Mitra, we were talking about putting a menstrual cup in. She was like, I'll have older women who are like, I can't do that. They won't touch themselves to put a menstrual cup in.
Really?
And then these are like 50-year-old women. Like it's because I think years ago as well, especially with like Catholicism and religion and like shame around female sexuality was huge. I think it's, I think also the younger generations now, I think like 16, 17, 18-year-old girls now are incredible.
Yeah, they are. They are. But I think there's still a lot of work to be done. And a lot of that, I think, actually is down to popular culture.
Mm.
I think if you think about film and TV and you think about how many times you see a woman masturbating on screen. And we spoke about this. We did an episode about the taboo surrounding female masturbation with Scarlett Curtis a few months ago. It was great. And we spoke to her about it. And there's this scene in Black Swan.
Oh, yeah.
Where Natalie Portman masturbates. And it's very much done in a way where she clearly is, like, doing it very sneakily.
I can't remember.
And
doesn't she's
very ashamed.
Isn't it really scary, that bit?
It is. It's quite dark. I mean, the whole film is, like, a psychological thriller. But it's very much done in a way that, like, oh, my God, this is so naughty. And this is so, you know, scandalous. And
whereas guys are seen tossing themselves off in every episode of The Inbetweeners.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's in The Hangover, but every TV show that's like a sitcom, there's always a bit where someone gets caught or the kid is like, and everyone finds it really funny.
Yeah.
It's a very like, oh, what a lol coming of age thing for a guy to do.
Whereas for women, it's like embarrassing. And I remember even when we were younger, if we would speak to people about, you know, if we, people would have conversations like, I found a dildo under her bed. Oh my God, it's so funny.
Oh my God, it would go around the whole school. Yeah. I remember that. I literally can remember it was blue.
Yeah.
I know who you're talking about.
Yeah.
So-and-so's daughter.
Exactly. And you just shame people for doing something that is so normal and so natural and so important. Because if you are not, as a woman, if you're not masturbating, you are not going to have good sex.
But oh no, but not only
because
that,
you're not going
like,
to know what works for your body.
Yeah, you don't know your body. And then it also just, it gives you much, I think you just need to be in control of your sexuality and what you're comfortable with. Like you don't have to do anything you don't want to do.
No, absolutely not. But I just think it's about embracing your sexuality and not ever feeling ashamed by it.
Yeah. I think it's so important that we realise that our sexuality is ours. Because I think what happens is when you realise sex is about you, it gives you that control to realise when this isn't for me, so I'm not going to do it. Was when we were younger, it was always about the guys, so it didn't matter what I was thinking.
Mm.
And I think there's so many situations that I've spoken to friends about where no one's saying it's not consensual because it was, and it wasn't rape and it wasn't sexual assault, but it also wasn't about the fact that you were going to have sex then with this person, and that was just something that you did, and it was never about your own experience or you getting your kicks. Mm. It was always about the guy. It wasn't about like the guy was forcing them into it. It was just no one had been taught that sex is between two people and it should be like a really wonderful, I also don't get why it's shameful. I think it's such a beautiful thing. It's like the ultimate culmination of like emotion and love and feeling, and it should feel like ecstatic and beautiful and wonderful. And also it doesn't look like porn.
No, but there's so much sexism surrounding sex. Like, you know, men are supposed to be stoic and emotionally detached and, you know, stick it in as many girls as they want without ever got, like, you know, getting feelings. Whereas women, it's like, oh, your body produces oxytocin after you come and you're going to instantly feel more attracted to someone after you sleep with them. That is so not true. That is so not true. And I know from experience that's not true.
Like, I don't know. I think I've fallen in love with everyone that I've ever slept with.
Really? Oh, God, I definitely haven't. I definitely haven't. I don't think I've...
Oh no, but I don't mean literally fallen in love.
No,
I
but mean, you've like, always had feelings for the guys that you slept with, so I don't think I have.
But I think that's me though, because I just think I'm like, in terms of even talking about relationships again, I'm someone who like, I'm not quick to fall in love, but I'm much more open to it than you are, I think.
Yeah, well, this goes back to my family what I'm saying. Like, I push all that stuff out. I'm very good at blocking it away.
What's really interesting is...
This is like a therapy session.
It always is. But even though you and your mum really get on, my parents don't necessarily have, like, they're together, they're fine, but they're not like, I wouldn't look at them and be like, oh my God, they're so in love. But I'm so in love with my mum. Like, so I've always been very... talked about love and known, like, felt love as a very close to home thing. Whereas I think as much as you love your mum, obviously you did, like, your relationship was hard, so that makes complete sense. Because I was trying to go like, but my parents aren't like it isn't a perfect family home. But that's so true. Now you just said that, I think you just have to have an experience of like safety and love, like just a feeling that you know that you'll be safe and love.
Oh God, yeah. There has never, my family situation, there's never been any stability ever.
And I think that's where it comes from. So I think it's like, if you don't feel like you could ever trust another person with you, no matter what, even in what capacity, is even that's your sister or even a teacher, just someone gave you that, then I think you can be open to falling in love or like trust someone else with your feelings, which is a really difficult thing to do, to trust someone else to take, not to take care of you, but like, it's a massive thing to do.
It's really difficult, particularly if you're stuck in a rut. And interestingly, the time that I started dating was when I moved out of my mum's flat, which was a very, very small, claustrophobic environment, me, her and her boyfriend.
Great flat though, I always thought I was going to live there when I was older.
You did. You always had these weird fantasies about it. But my point is that I never dated anyone there because I don't think I ever felt comfortable. Yeah. I don't think I ever felt like I could be myself, and I was in this like quite volatile atmosphere.
You were
the whole
very
time.
Much taught like a treated like a child though.
Yeah, and I was completely. And now I live in my aunt's house where I'm, you know, much more autonomous and feel much more comfortable, and that's when I started dating people. And I think there's definitely something to be said with that. Like, I feel more free, and I feel like I can actually, you know, yes, there's still those feelings of isolation and being a single unit and whatever, and that's always sort of an unfortunate undercurrent for me, but I definitely feel way more liberated than I have felt before.
I also actually think, like, what we talked about with family, you're quite good at talking about it. I'm actually quite bad. Not that, honestly, my family, like, love each other, but my parents just aren't that, like, perfect parents. And I didn't know this because no one talks about it.
No ones are.
So, yeah, but I didn't know that. So I remember when I was younger, I'd go around to people's houses and be so jealous. Like, why do the parents... Obviously, when your friends are there, they're not going to start, like, arguing about the washing machine or whatever it is. But I then, it's only now that we've got older and everyone talks about like we found that like someone's mum's, something's happened, like someone's life, or whatever. And you're like, oh fuck, no one's parents are perfect apart from maybe Matt's, which is very annoying. Literally the perfect family. Aww. It's so cute. But like, I don't think anyone talks about it now. So everyone's walking around like carrying this baggage from the age of like five.
Thinking, like, I'm so different. Yeah. My experience is so much worse than everyone else's. And that obviously exacerbates those feelings.
Yeah, no one has a perfect family unit. You'll find this. No. Even your friends that you think have the most perfect lives, there'll always be some weird family member or something that's happened in their family that you just can't talk about, because I think there's just a lot of shame around, because I think it is the ultimate, you know what, I think it goes back to, God, we've covered so many things. I think it goes back to success. I think in our society, in the Western society, a family strong unit, think about every advert on TV, every single aspirational thing is about a perfect family unit. So I think there's a huge shame to admit that it's not working or that it's breaking. So no one talks about it. I think even as a child, you understand that you can't tell, I wouldn't tell my friends I was upset my parents were arguing or something. I wouldn't talk about it. You know, from a very young age that just isn't, that's not anyone else's business. And it's not, but it's, I think it can be very damaging if when you're older, you don't try and address things that have happened, however little they are.
Yeah, no, I think honestly, the most important thing is to talk about it. Like, I have been through some shit this year.
Yeah.
And I have spoken about it to anyone who will listen, because I want to, A, reduce the stigma surrounding the things that I've been through, and B, it helps me more than anything. It helps me feel less ashamed. It helps me feel less alone. And it just gets it off my chest. Otherwise, this is when, you know, I'm on the tube and it all... But really, always cry on the tube. I don't know
why. Every time I see you, you're like, just cried on the tube.
Yeah, I don't know why. It always so comes sad. Out. I feel like I'm bottling stuff in. Christ, I'm getting so... I'm so open. I can't believe this is going to go out live.
You can take stuff out.
But it's because, like, if I'm on the tube, it feels like you bottle stuff up and then suddenly you're surrounded by people... But you feel more alone than ever, because you don't know any of these people. You're in a tiny dark tunnel, quite claustrophobic. And that's when I just stop. And I'm usually listening to music.
Yeah.
Music's very triggering for me, as it is for a lot of people.
Yeah.
And then it just all comes out. Whereas if you speak to people, it doesn't. Whereas if you feel like you're bottling stuff up, I mean, for me at least, it just comes out like that.
You'll just be so surprised when you go to a friend and say, like, do you know what, actually, I think that... I feel like this might have affected me. I 100 times out of 100 will be like, oh my God, I feel exactly the same way.
And completely.
There's just all those things that you think are shameful. Pretty much at least one of your friends in your friendship group would have been through it.
Yeah.
And even if they haven't, if they're your really good friend, no one is going to judge you. Nothing I've ever said to Libby or Libby's ever said to me, either of us have been like, oh my God, I don't want to be your friend now.
No, but that's the most important thing in friendship, particularly female friendships, I think, is not being judgmental.
Oh yeah, you have to just, because this thing, I don't want to be judgmental, but I try and like protect you. And it's not, sometimes you just can't be judgmental. When we were younger, though, I think we were a lot more judgmental.
Yeah, I think we were.
I think it's because you're figuring out who you are.
Yeah, but also because of the school environment. Yeah. I think everyone's a bit judgmental. Everyone's figuring out who they are. Everyone's a bit on edge.
And everything anyone did was like almost like a threat. So if someone did something, everyone's backs would get up. Whereas now that we're older, we're like, oh, well done. Good for you. Like, it should be a celebration. Even if a friend has a one-night stand, like, great times. I'll take you to the clinic, or like whatever it is, you have to be really supportive, because women in society are shamed by magazines, media, men, movie, every single thing in the world shames pretty much any action or any rebellious, technically, action that a woman makes. So within your friendship group, you've got to make sure that you're the one that's like, no, this is fine.
Yeah, and go to the clinic. Go to the bloody clinic. Yes. Like, that's another thing that people think is so shameful, is STIs and STDs. And it's just like, nope. It's very normal. It's very healthy. It's very responsible. Go and get tested.
Me and Anita talked about this because we used to do it all the time at uni, but I'm like such hypochondriac. I used to order them online all the time.
Even if can order them online and they come within like 2 days. It's very easy.
I'll just do another one.
just for fun.
But that's like pregnancy tests. I do them all the time just for fun. It's great. I don't know why.
Oh my God, that would be so anxiety inducing.
I always used to, but I used to stress myself out even if I was on the pill that I'd got pregnant. So I'd like convince my boyfriend that I was pregnant, and then I'd have to take the pregnancy test, and once I took it I'd get my period because I'd obviously stress myself out and it would stop it. So literally there was a time where I had to do a pregnancy test to get my period.
Oh my God,
I know.
It's so funny how powerful the mind is.
I remember so powerful.
I once took a pregnancy test in a bathroom of a gym, and I had worked myself up so much, my whole body instantly went hot. And I was sweating profusely in this tiny, tiny cubicle. It was not hot. There was aircon in this changing room. And I just remember I nearly fainted. And I hadn't even taken the test yet. No, I think I was waiting for the result. And I nearly fainted. I was like, honestly, it's nuts.
I plan exactly what I'm going to say to Matt. And then, do you know what happened? But then I did one the other day. And then a little bit of me, because I had to, after I had the Marina call, you have to have it like a week after.
Okay.
A little bit of me was a tiny bit. So I do not want a child. But I think I just was like, maybe it's going to be positive. And I was like, I wonder what I'll say. I was like, oh, it would be quite cute. And then it wasn't.
No
and then
way!
A little bit. I don't want a child at all. I did not want it to be positive. But I think just in that moment, I kind of got a bit confused about what was going on. And I felt just a slight like, oh.
That's so funny. It was so funny. It's like your maternal instinct being like, oh no, this is what I've been born on this earth to do. It's to procreate. So,
oh God. Weird. Yeah, it's just stressful. I feel like we've covered so many things.
Oh my God, we've covered so much.
I don't even know what the title of this is going to be now.
And no, only Liv, we just have a catch up.
Yeah.
We're both really hungover, had 2 hours sleep.
I'm literally recording this in my dressing gown. Mm. Liv's had 2 hours sleep. I opened the door with a face mask on, Liv's had like a serial killer.
She did. It's really funny. Your skin is glowing, though, may I say.
Thank you so much. I've got a head to a bottomless punch now, actually.
That's fun.
I know. I can't really be bothered.
I want to go to sleep. I'm exhausted.
You can do that. Well, thank you so much for listening, guys. Where can we find you, Olivia?
You can find me on Instagram and Twitter. My Twitter is OliviaPetter1. My Instagram is OliviaPetter8. Or if you want to listen to my lovely podcast, it's Millennial Love, Millennial_Love on Instagram.
Amazing. It's great. I definitely recommend listening. They have lots of tips on dating and different things that affect dating as a millennial. It's amazing.
Thank you.
Very enjoyable. Thank you so much for coming on.
Oh, thank you for having me. It's been thrilling.
Amazing.
Bye.
Bye.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.